Morning, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of my weekly market and economic commentary. Obviously, I'm Herb Morgan. If you're interested in following intra-week commentary, you can find me on LinkedIn as Herb Morgan or on X as ETF underscore strategist. The presentation you are seeing and or hearing has been prepared by me, Cantor Fitzgerald Investment Advisors, for use with both investors and their financial advisors who are each expected to make their own investment decisions. Nothing contained in the presentation should be treated as investment advice. There are no recommendations for the purchase or sale of any securities. And let's move on and talk about a great week, one of the best weeks we've had in months for equities. As you can see, the S&P up almost 2.7%. Mid and small cap stocks participated. That's good. There's actually now a little bit of fear of rate hikes. I don't see a rate hike coming. There's a little bit of fear of it, and that typically means small and mid-cap stocks would significantly underperform. They're very sensitive to rate hikes. International markets participated. Emerging markets really participated. China lagged a little bit, and it's been leading during this period of, not even a correction. It's been way less than 10%. Bonds, though, a little bit higher on those interest rates on the longer end. You can see the 20-year Treasury index down almost 1%, now down almost 10% for the year. Think about it. Beginning of the year, if you'd said, the Fed is going to cut rates, which is what everybody thought was going to happen. U.S. government securities are very safe. Why don't I allocate more to long-term treasuries and lock in these yields? Well, you would have locked in the yields for sure, but your principal value, because rates have gone higher, even though the Fed's not going to hike, rates on the market set side of the curve, the Fed only sets the federal funds rate and the discount rate, and they can influence the longer end of the curve by purchasing or selling securities, but they're not currently doing that. They're just letting their balance sheet run off. It would be hard-pressed to have found anybody that said 20-year Treasury index would be down 10% by the end of April. Let's get into some of the data we got last week. We got flash readings for April. April's not over. We'll get the final readings next week from S&P Global on manufacturing. And this is one of the things that actually gave the market some enthusiasm last week, was that manufacturing declined. That's right, actually declined, barely, 49.9. It went below a 50 reading. That's a flash. The final reading could be back above or below, and that's as close to 50 as you're going to get. But there was this concern of manufacturing reaccelerating here, and that would add inflationary pressure to an already inflationary situation. So believe it or not, the market actually liked the softening in manufacturing. S&P Global also put out a flash reading on services. Moving forward, there we go. Fell from 51.7 to 50.9, and services had been kind of well above 50 for the better part of a year. It dipped once before, as you can see here, late last year, early this year, but that was below expectations. That also gave the market a little more enthusiasm that perhaps there's some demand-based inflationary relief on the horizon. Now, I still am convinced that the Fed should not be the lone wolf, should not be the only one in charge of trying to handle the inflationary situation. A lot of the inflationary pressure that remains, the residual inflationary pressure, has everything to do with a massive fiscal deficit at the federal level. Blame that on the Congress. The Congress sets the spending, and the president signs the budget ultimately. New home sales in March rebounded up almost 9%, well above expectations, well above expectations. After a decline in February, new home sales running at a pace that looks like about 700,000 annual new home sales. That's below what we really need to replace all the stock that gets dilapidated, falls down because of earthquakes, floods, tornadoes, fires, et cetera, and population growth. We actually need more than that. So that's keeping inflationary pressure on housing prices. Pending home sales also up far more than expected, up 3.4% after a 1.6 gain in February. The pace of new home sales, though, is about 4.5% lower than last year. Much of this has to do with very low inventory levels. very low inventory levels result from that period we had a few years ago of near zero interest rates, where consumers smartly and rightly locked into very long-term, very low interest rates. So to move now, if the typical move up, sell the house, buy something a little more expensive, becomes far more expensive because you might be going from a 2% mortgage to a 6% mortgage when you go from a house that costs $1 to a house that costs $1.20. So far less moving up, meaning far less inventory coming on the market, and then far more subsequent purchases, or far fewer subsequent purchases, I should say. Durable goods orders for the month of March were up 2.6, just about in line with the expectations. Was a big gain in aircraft, and aircraft orders are so large, such high ticket items, that skews the data. So we like to look at it without the transportation component. Still up 0.2%. Every Thursday morning, 5:30 a.m. Pacific, we get a report on initial claims, first time claims for unemployment, people filing because they were laid off, let go, lost their jobs. Weekly initial claims fell to 207. I've said this over and over and over again. This is the lowest in history. This matches the lowest absolute number, but that number relative to the size of our labor force, relative to the size of our population, is by far lower than anything we've ever seen. Hard to predict a recession when you have the lowest level of unemployment claims in national history. GDP for the first quarter was up 1.6%. The estimate was for 2.5. For about an hour or two, it had a little bit of panic as the headline readers read this through, big disappointment. And it really wasn't. It was a very strong number. GDP is the formula is consumption plus investment plus government spending plus exports minus imports. Personal consumption, very, very important critical component, was up 2.5%. That was a very sizable gain. Service spending, it's you and I spending on services, going to restaurants, doing things, rose 4%. That's the biggest gain we've seen since Q3 of 21. Federal government spending did go down a little bit. That's welcome because of that 6% deficit I keep talking about. Inventories, the change in inventories can have an impact. So that's not considered necessarily representative of a final demand in the economy. And international trade all subtracted. We just had more imports, and that's a subtraction from GDP. So we looked through that GDP number, nothing to worry about there at all. It was a very, very good number. Personal income in the month of March up 0.5%, right in line with expectations, but look at spending up 0.8%. Again, so we started out the week thinking there was some softness. Oh, good, the Fed can finally, you know, cut rates or really signal this week, they have a meeting this week, that they're not going to be raising rates. Well, not so fast, because that GDP number was actually pretty good. The personal spending number is actually really good. And then late in the week, Friday, we got the core PCE inflation reading. This is the inflation gauge. Now, the Fed was given by Congress this mandate, maintain price stability. In other words, we don't want a lot of inflation. We don't want a lot of deflation. For 20, 30 years, that mandate was never clearly defined. The Ben Bernanke Fed, towards the end of his term, they decided to define what price stability meant. And so they just copied what they do at the European Central Bank, which is define price stability as 2% inflation as measured by, in this case, not the European Central Bank, but in our case, as measured by the core PCE, personal consumption expenditures. There's two readings. There's the headline number, which is more volatile because it has food and energy. And then there's the core, which is smoothed out by excluding food and energy. In March, both rose 0.3% for the second consecutive month, exactly in line with expectations. It's up 2.7 year over year, where the core, that's the one that matters, is 2.8. The estimate was 2.7, so that was a disappointing read. You're not ready to panic and say the trend has changed. But what I've been saying for some time is going from here, 3% line, which is essentially where we are with 2.8, to their target, 2.0, doesn't look like much of a move. But I think it's going to be a challenge. It's going to be a challenge only partly because there's a lot of demand in the economy. See, what the Fed ends up doing is trying to slow the demand in the economy. But they never slow the demand of deficit-financed fiscal spending. Deficit-financed fiscal spending is what's contributing and making inflation stubborn and not allowing it to come down. Federal Reserve has already done the job of raising the interest rates. Federal Reserve has already done the job of deprinting or shredding $1.5 trillion. So reduced the money supply, but you have the government coming in with the spending side and demanding goods and services at a level. Well, admittedly, the money supply is still much higher than it was before COVID. And this is what's making it so difficult. So now the Fed could be finding themselves soon in a bind. If inflation doesn't get to 2, and if the economy finally slows and you get some unemployment, then they could be in a real pickle or a real dilemma. Right now, we've been pretty darn lucky, I would say. We got a sentiment reading from the University of Michigan. They say in April, sentiment fell from 79.4 to 77.2. That was, well below, a little bit below, I should say, expectations. Current conditions fell and expectations. Overall, why? Inflation. Minimum wage law, new minimum wage law, $20 an hour in California has significantly impacted the price of dining out, fast food. So that's adding to the inflationary pressure nationally. Gasoline prices, we are now back above $6 a gallon here where I am. That's adding to the inflationary pressures. And those inflationary pressures subtract from the consumer sentiment. On the good side of consumer sentiment, we have jobs, plentiful, good jobs. Labor is in control, and that's a good thing because it makes them consumers. But this inflationary issue remains and is a challenge for most people. Well, we're starting to get solidly into earnings season for the quarter. This week is the biggest week of the quarter for those earnings, biggest part of the market cap, some of the big tech names, but also so was last week. If you remember, I said, I think Google's going to possibly add a dividend. Alphabet, Google or Alphabet was going to add a dividend. They did announce that dividend as well as a $70 billion buyback. That contributed to the big market move up last week. And I said, you don't want to be out of this market. You don't want to try and time this market ahead of these earnings of these big tech companies. And they've come in far better than expected. We've had about half of the S&P 500 report, 228 names, 183 have beaten the estimate. Average earnings surprise now is 9%. And as you can see, with the exception of energy, the beats have been across the board, and real estate have been across the board very, very, very big. Real estate obviously impacted by higher interest rates. There's a lot to be concerned about in the commercial real estate space, particularly in office, secondarily in residential, and then energy also just barely beating to the upside. And so what's happening is the blended estimated earnings per share for the future 12 months after companies report, then analysts, we can update our models. What do we think they'll be for the next 12 months? Well, part of that's impacted by the guidance that's given on these earnings conference calls that are happening all day, every day. Most of the releases are before the close and after the close, generally speaking. But now, solidly above $250. And just a couple of months ago, a lot of people were saying, hey, we peaked for earnings estimates. This quarter is going to be weak. This number is going to start to roll over. That makes stocks even more expensive than they are. But if earnings are beating and estimates are going up, how expensive are stocks really? That's the question that people in my position, we all ask each other on a daily basis. But as of Friday's close, the forward estimate for the S&P 500 is $251 a share. And I expect that'll go higher this week as we get a number of marquee or key names reporting this week. No big economic data today on Monday, but quite a bit of economic data the rest of the week. House prices from Case-Shiller and FHA, employment costs, Chicago PMI, consumer confidence. None of those are big market moving. Then we start to get into the market moving data on Wednesday with ADP employment. They're looking for 185,000 jobs to be added. S&P Global, the final manufacturing PMI, We've got ISM's manufacturing PMI expected to be above 50. So right there at that line, construction spending, JOLTS or job openings still high. They've been trending. They've been as high as 12 million. So a little bit of softness there. But the big event of the week, there's many actually this week. One of the big events is the Fed meeting. They will make a decision on rates. I can't imagine there's any decision other than wait. You've got core PCE, as we just saw, 2.8%. The target is 2. Why would you cut rates with full employment when your inflation reading is well above your target of 2? Auto sales, we've got also. That's fine. Then we've got regular weekly claims down in that low 200. The trade deficit, bigger the deficit, bigger the subtraction from GDP. Productivity, labor costs, factory orders. Friday, the big BLS, Bureau of Labor Statistics, jobs report. And you would think this is good news, right? We had 300,000 last month, way above expectations. The market's kind of hoping it comes in soft. If it comes in soft, that pulls forward that Fed rate cut that the market seems so desperately to want. Unemployment at 3.8. And then we've got services PMIs from both S&P and ISM, both expected to be above 50. In addition, it's a big week for earnings. This is the biggest week, as I mentioned. Some notable earnings really starting tomorrow. Coke, McDonald's, and Amazon. All indicators of the health of the consumer, which drives the U.S. economy. Of those three, Amazon the most important. Why? Remember, I said I thought Alphabet or Google might institute a dividend. I can't imagine Amazon lets it go too long without following suit. They have the cash. it's massive. I think 30 some odd billion in free cash flow. That's free, not operating cash flow, but free cash flow after the CapEx. 37 billion or something in that range over the last 12 months. They'll announce another quarter. I would kind of be surprised if they didn't announce a dividend, but we'll see. We'll see. I haven't read much on it. Wednesday, 3M ADP, the same ADP that puts out the jobs number, Qualcomm, big tech company here in my backyard. And then the biggest of all on Thursday is Apple. We don't know if we're going to get much sort of an AI announcement or information, directionality information from Apple, or they're going to wait more for the developers conference. But the stock was upgraded this morning I think it's up $6 or something this morning as we are recording this. Thanks, everybody. We updated our pre-roll and post-roll for the commentary this week. I hope you like them. Don't forget, you can also find us on audio only on any of your podcast format. But please go to the YouTube channel, type in Herb Morgan or Slaying Bulls and Bears, and hit that subscribe button. You will get this automatically on Monday mornings. Thanks, and I'll be back to you again next week.